Good day, ladies and gentlemen, although probably mostly gentlemen. This is the Terror of Demons program with Tim Flanders, my friend and co-host, and myself, Kennedy Hall. And on this show, we discuss topics that pertain more specifically to Catholic men. Today, we're going to be discussing a very controversial personality, as best as we can to start the show, the famous or infamous, depending on who you ask, Nick Fuentes. And then we're going to answer some questions from our Terror of Demons chat community that pertain to the Catholic spiritual and moral life for men. So, Tim, are you ready?
Jesus is King. Let's do it.
Okay. Now, because we're talking about Mr. Fuentes, I want to give a quick story as to why I actually want to do this. And then I want to make it clear what we're doing and what we're not doing. So here's the quick story. So I got a friend who is a Catholic educator and a good friend, faithful man, very good traditional Catholic. And he teaches at a boys' school. And we were at a wedding last week and we were chatting. And he teaches obviously these kids high school, you know, to adulthood. And he's very blissfully out of touch with anything on the internet that is not necessary for his like actual real life. I kind of jealous of him for that. And obviously he knows I'm kind of in this world. He's like, Kennedy, what are these, who are my students listening to? Like, who's the big guy that's like all the young men are flocking to and stuff. He says, I know it was Andrew Tate a few years ago, but he kind of died off with our guys. Like, who's everyone listening to? And I said, well, they're probably, if they are listening to a famous, you know, conservative right-wing guy that's in their age range, they're probably listening to Nick Fuentes. So basically asked me to describe Nick Fuentes. And I said, you know, what's interesting is he's very different. It's very hard to actually put him in a box, because on the one hand, he has many virtues. He's very articulate. He has many political opinions that guys like you and I would agree with, that, you know, break down the barriers of what's acceptable in sort of regular neocon conversation. Nick Fuentes is great at touching topics that we all talk about privately, but he'll talk about them publicly. So very courageous that way. Great memory recall of history, and other things. On the other hand, lots of profanity, lots of off-color humor that I think crosses the line, and still all the same pitfalls of the worst of media. So the constant squabbling, the constant drama, the constant gossip about, oh, this person texting about me, and you know, all these things. And I said, if you had like, and I should also add, he also does profess to be a Catholic. So often he'll have statements that he'll make about Catholicism that are very good. And I said, it's like if you had like four Venn diagrams, you know, you had like an E. Michael Jones circle, and you had like a Pat Buchanan circle, and you had like a little bit of a white nationalist circle. And then you had at the same time, like JP2 conservative Catholic circle. And then like Joe Rogan, and then you like put them all together. That's Nick Fuentes. And it's a very curious thing. Am I making any sense by saying that?
Certainly. I mean, this is the impression that I've gotten with, I mean, let me just admit, first of all, that I have a pretty much a superficial understanding of Nick Fuentes. The most I ever listened to him was his Charlie Kirk, memorial a couple of days after Charlie Kirk was assassinated. I listened to the first half hour, 45 minutes, which was very good. Very, very great stuff that he was saying. And I tweeted about it, and that got a little traction. But then my other friend said, hey, take a look at this other video of Fuentes. And it was him saying, he was saying, I effed your organization, without the bleeping that I just did of myself. And he was talking about TPUSA. And so he was talking about it in you know, the way that, you know, when you're growing up and you have like 13-year-old boys joking about their sexual conquest or whatever, which is just this distorted, fallen way to express your masculinity. And this is the type of thing where Catholic men would just smack you around for talking that way. You know, I mean, that would be not acceptable in any Catholic brotherhood whatsoever. But apparently that's cool. So there's an immense contrast between those two. Obviously, those two worldviews that I saw of him just a few days after Kirk. So it is a strange Venn diagram, indeed.
And, you know, one of the things that's near and dear to both of us is Tim and I are not, well, actually, Tim looks his age. I look like I'm going to be turning 50 soon. Actually, Tim is older than me by a few months, but we're both 37 years old. You know, we're in the smack in the middle of like the millennial generation. But when I started teaching, I was a teacher from like 2013 to 2020 or whatever. And my first grade 12 class I had, I was 26 or 27 years old, and my students were 17 and 18. So they were kind of like the crossover between millennial and Gen Z. And it was fascinating because I was only 7, 8 years older than them. So on the one hand, obviously we maintained, you know, teacher-student relationship, but like on the one hand, we were almost like friends in a sense. But then on the other hand, I could see that they were in this generation that was wholly different than mine. And my wife showed me this little vignette reel thing that she saw on Facebook, talking about what is it, what's the beating heart of millennials? Like what's our concern, you know? And it was a very beautiful little thing. And it was like the millennials, people like us, we're kind of like the last of the Mohicans who grew up in a different world than the one that we grew into. So, you know, you can remember having no internet, let alone having dial-up. And then sometimes there was internet, but then like eventually some kid got high speed, but like you didn't have it yet. Or like maybe you got it in high school, or you know, we had like flip phones or car phones, but like no one used them. You know, I remember going through high school, and by no means was I a Boy Scout. I've said this before. I was not a good Christian boy the way I was raised. So I had problems, but I look at the way that we even when we were not having the most wholesome of lifestyles, everything was still very human. There was no talking to each other with like screens in your hand. No one was texting. I mean, I knew how to get everywhere without a GPS. Like I knew my whole city like I was a taxi driver, because it's like you knew where all the main roads were, and then, you know, all you'd have to be told is, at the intersection of this and that, turn left, and like you'd know your way there, you know? That was normal, you know? Like never once did I ever see anyone at a party my whole high school time on a phone. Maybe to answer a phone because someone called and it was like they'd close the flip phone after, but there was no like staring at the phone. Even the video games, like when the whole video game, you know, multiplayer network video game style thing started, it had to be physical spaces. So guys would bring their towers to these video game cafes and stuff. And yeah. I'm not advocating that, but they were with people, you know? There was no like Xbox Live, whatever. That was when I was in college and whatever. And, so we were raised, funny enough, like our upbringing, Tim, way more similar in some ways, even to like our grandparents.
Yeah.
Than to kids who are 10 years younger than us.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of empathy, without trying to sound patronizing, I have a lot of empathy for this Zoomer generation, because they're kind of like the lost boys. They're kind of, you know, like they're fully digital, fully virtual since like, you know, childhood. iPhones and Chromebooks and stuff shoved in their faces when they're in grade 4, you know? And I think that Fuentes is so fascinating for so many of these guys, because he kind of is like, if this makes sense, it's almost like he's like the court jester who like breaks down all the norms that they find oppressive. But at the same time, there's just a lot of, there are a lot of traits to that movement that I think are ultimately spiritually and morally dangerous. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I like what you're saying, because the technology before the smartphone, the technology was not isolating in the same way as, yeah, like you said, like our great grandparents had the television set, but you turn on the television set, you have family programming together. You watch it as a family. You watch the sports game together as a family. There's like a communal experience of the technology. Whereas the smartphone, I know my first smartphone was when I got, before I got engaged to my wife. That was in 2013 or so. That was my first smartphone.
Yeah, me too.
Now the smartphone is creating a virtual reality of isolation and initiation into manhood. And I get this from Jason Craig over at Sword and Spade magazine, one of the best Catholic men's magazines ever, I think, fraternist organization, great organization. He talks about how initiation into manhood is about initiation into the brotherhood of men. So you're initiated into this brotherhood, and so that you act, speak, think like a man, and then you gain the respect of your brethren who respect you, and then they support you and they call you to greatness. So if you are, you know, doing something wrong, they call you out on that, they smack you around, you get going. And so many of us are coming from broken homes already. So maybe we don't, our father's not around or whatever, we got divorce situations. And there's probably not an experience of brotherhood in real life. And then, but you find something online, you find this brotherhood online. And to be fair, like you and I became friends online. Like we got mm-hmm. to know each other online. That's how we became friends. Now I've spent time with you in person, I don't know, half a dozen times now or whatever. But I wonder if our own brothers, our younger brothers who are out there, Gen Z or whatever, maybe they are seeking that initiation into manhood that we all desire as men growing up. And then they find this affirmation online. They find this respect that they should naturally be wanting in a naturally ordered sense. But the way that the technology works and everything, it just sort of incentivizes the most superficial and just negative masculine traits, because that's what clicks and sells and whatnot. So it's certainly a concern, but I feel for that. I certainly have gone on. I didn't just like get initiated into manhood and consider myself a man when I was like 16, you know, I have had to go through all sorts of, you know, difficulties over the years to try to figure out what does it even mean to be a man. And I feel for the struggle of every man growing up in our society, our secularized society, and especially in this digitized virtual reality, trying to navigate that. It's extremely difficult and confusing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's funny. So back in the halcyon days of like 2015, 2016, when the, you know, the world's always losing its mind, but this was one of those periods where it was like, whoa, it's losing its mind in 4K and it's happening really fast. The Trump thing and the SJW thing and the trans thing and all these things are just happening, right? It was everything seemed like it was kind of accelerated. And I remember at the time, you know, you'd use this term snowflake. And, you know, the SJWs, the social justice warriors, everyone would call them snowflakes because they needed to have, you know, their safe spaces and whatnot. And because they couldn't take criticism and everything, and they'd be made fun of for that. You know, it was like, wow, you guys are so fragile that, you know, at university campuses, you have to have like the non-whites hangout room for like the colored kids and like the feminine one and like the trans one, because like you literally just can't be around people you disagree with. And it was super common in, let's say, conservative right-wing mentality to sort of be like, well, that's obviously silly. You should be a little tougher than that. But the weird thing is that as this generation of guys has grown up like exclusively plugged in, I almost feel like that phenomenon has happened. Because sure, there's a lot of bravado, there's a lot of like, you know, owning people in monologues and like, you know, showing how everyone's a simp or whatever, you know, like everyone's bad and, you know, we're the based ones and stuff. But I look at that as a man, as a guy who, you know, used to be a teenager and, you know, early 20s and stuff. It looks to me almost like a photo negative of what those left-wing crazies do. Because what do the left-wing crazies do? They reject everyone who is different than them, basically. And then they lash out and they ridicule them. And they basically like smear everyone who doesn't represent their thing as like the Antichrist. I see something similar kind of happening with this like Nick Fuentes phenomenon where, again, I would agree with the vast majority of their political opinions, at least to some degree, like I get it. But it's almost like they've adopted this mentality that because the mainstream, the system, whatever, isn't like them, that they almost have to like huddle together in this safe space where they can say whatever they want, you know, exile anyone they want, destroy anyone they want. And if you don't get it, it's just because you're a boomer. Or if you don't get it, it's just because you're part of the matrix or the system or whatever. I see it as almost like a photo negative of that same disordered isolation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's just a form of effeminacy. It's an addiction to the pleasure of being right, even if you're actually true, you have a correct opinion. And there's this great quote from St. John of the Ladder in Ladder Divine Ascent. He says that this is what's checking my own pride here as a podcaster, a writer. He says, whoever is in conversation attempting to establish his own opinion, even if his opinion is true, is sick with the devil's disease. And the way I understand it is that like we can be so attached to our opinion, even if our opinion is correct, that we're deriving this pleasure from being right, and we're deriving a pleasure from the fact that those guys are wrong. It's like the pleasure of the Pharisee. When the Pharisee went up to pray with himself, I thank you that I'm not like this other guy, even though like he does have something right going for him. He should be doing that stuff. He has a zeal for the law, right? And I've certainly done that in my own life. I continue to do that. It's like a continual struggle because I don't want to take any pleasure in if I'm correct, like in this excessive way where I get attached to it and then I treat other people like trash. If you have that, Dom Scupoli in Spiritual Combat says that if you have a disturbance in your peace, it's proof that you're attached to creatures. So if you have some sort of disturbance and you need to lash out at somebody because they're challenging your view, then you're attached to something. And this is, by the way, there was a great video of Charlie Kirk, and you shared it actually. You shared this video of Charlie Kirk, and he was interacting with some kind of leftist, she was a young lady who, you know, obviously had an interesting outfit of some kind, and he was just like interacting her with this great respect for her, even though obviously she was entirely wrong in her opinion, but he was actually treating her with this great kindness and respect so that she understood, and she experienced the love of Christ in the way that he treated her, and he wasn't just trying to browbeat her with truth. And it's this very difficult and complex and easy, is easy, an easy thing to get into this Pharisee mentality where you're right, but then you treat other people without respect. And there's an addiction. I think there's that effeminate addiction to the pleasure of being right.
Well, you know, yeah. And I want to do that. That's a good analysis. And I also do want to touch on the profanity element. Like, listen, I'm not a pearl clutcher. English is a funny language because in English we have a few words that everyone knows are swear words, whereas in other language, usually, like at least in Spanish, French, and Italian, it's regular words, but it kind of depends on how you say them, besides the blasphemies, but just other swear words. And it's almost like it's not really a swear word unless it's said in anger. That's kind of how Spanish and Italians would look at a lot of different things. So I get it. Like, I'm a regular guy. I am not above the odd bad word slipping out of my mouth. I get, you know, but I'm in the Holy Name Society. And, you know, we make a pledge once a month in front of the altar, raising the right hand. Usually I'm holding a kid in my other hand. And it's after Mass. And, you know, we pledge ourselves against blasphemy, perjury, and obscene speech. Obscene is the proper term, right? Because we know certain contexts, certain things are obscene in different ways and whatever. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to turn off a podcast because someone swears. Like, I listen to Tucker Carlson sometimes. The odd bad word happens. And I'm like, whatever, guys talk like that. I'm not going to, like, you know, clutch my pearls and, like, make the, you know, the Puritan League of whatever speech. I get that. But there's a difference between, like, not being a saint, you know what I mean? And, wow, you just can't talk like that. You just can't talk like that. And it's not good for any man to enjoy a conversation where someone talks like that. Like, I get being angry. I get that politics is kind of vicious. I get being animated. There's nothing wrong with, like, a righteous anger. You can yell at the camera all you want. I get the humor element. I understand Gen Z has its own humor, the meme culture and stuff. I don't know what half the words mean. They'll probably just say, okay, boomer, fine. But the odd time I've tried to listen to one of his full shows. The only time I've been able to listen to one of his full shows is if he's talking to someone else on a different program where he talks for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and plays by their rules. And there's, like, no swear words, or this is the odd one. When I've tried to listen to his full program, I can't. Like, I get to a certain point where I'm trying to understand him, because I understand people are, I'm like, what is it about this guy? And I'm like, I feel like I need a shower just with how filthy the language is. And I just want to give a little bit of a warning to guys. You can tell yourself that, oh, that's just how he talks. It's not how I talk. But Dr. K, in his book, Good Music, Sacred Music, and Silence, he relays a conversation. It's one of the dialogues of Socrates talking to one of the nihilists. And the nihilist, the way that I think it was Plato writing it, right? And the way that Plato writes it is Socrates is about to talk to one of these nihilists who's going to present an argument for, like, nothingness, right? Nihilism. And Socrates stops him and he says, I do not want your argument in my soul. And the point being, Dr. K was talking about music. It's just like certain music is not worth listening to, even for reasons of curiosity, because it's going to be in there and it's going to be hard to get out. You can't inundate yourself with that much obscene. And I say obscene rather than profanity. Again, I get it. People use swear words, but there's, like, an obscenity to it. It's dark. It's constant. It's sexualized in nature. It's whatever. You can't put that into your soul over and over and over again and expect it not to have an effect on your spiritual and life of virtue. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would even put a distinction, because I used to work in the ghetto and people just saying F and this, F and that. That's just, like, all the time. It's just, like, a normal, totally normal thing. But even that is not that obscene. It's like, it's just a different situation where people are saying F in this, but it's not like I'm bragging because I F'd your organization. Yeah. And then I impregnated your organization. Like, that's just obscene. It's just disgusting. It's a disgusting and offensive to God way to speak about this. I saw another clip where Nick Fuentes was claiming that when you get married, your testosterone goes down. And it was like, this is, like, so disconnected from reality. But, I mean, I was also very disconnected from reality before I got married. It's like something about marriage that puts you in contact with real life in a way that's totally different. But yeah, this is obscene. It's something that, yeah, I don't want to hear those words come into me, because they go into me and I hear them, and they're anyone who believes in truth, goodness, and beauty should have a reaction against something that is ugly as sin. That's just the normal reaction. And I think it also shows a disconnection from reality, because when we're connected with reality, we are aware of our surroundings. We're aware of how we are presenting ourselves. We're aware of the way that we're coming across to a certain audience. And if this is sort of an echo chamber of obscenity, then you're cutting yourself off from real life, where that sort of thing is not normal. People find that disgusting, because it is.
Yeah, and one last thing before maybe we can wrap up the Fuentes portion of this. And again, I understand, guys, that there's not a lot of guys out there for you that represents your generation. So I empathize. But I don't know if it's worth the cost, is kind of the way I'll put it. Like, if you want to know about the Jewish question, just go read Father Fahey. Go read Father Fahey from the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. He'll answer all that stuff better than Fuentes ever will, to be honest, because he's a holy priest and much more wise. He'll get to the heart of the matter, and sure, there, I get it, like, Israel's a problem, all that stuff. But once you just kind of see that for what it is in the spiritual sense and the historical sense, you don't need to listen to some guy screaming about, with profanity, about the next thing that the, you know, Israel lobby is doing, right? I mean, it's like, I kind of quote-unquote red-pilled on the whole Jewish question 15 years ago when I was in university, and someone handed me some books. I can't believe it actually happened then, because it was so taboo then. And I read some books, and I was just like, oh, okay, this, I get it. And I didn't really feel the need to keep looking into stuff more and more, because I'm like, I'm just going to find more of the same. Or read Father Maudsley, for example. He's a contemporary author who will make sense of a lot of things happening right now. But also, the attachment to politics, like constant political anxiety, is not good for you. I understand there's a place for politics. I understand that there is a way to talk about politics. I understand politics is important. I'm in Canada. I keep up with what's happening. Because there's this balance between being informed and being obsessed, and I try to make sure that I don't go into the latter. But when you get to the point of being obsessed, like, it really is, you know, especially, you know, if I could say this, like, I understand that you'll see lots of clips of Fuentes talking about how, and he said this recently, like, he wants to bring people to the Eucharist, the ultimate truth is God, and these sorts of things. Certainly, I know he believes that in what he says. And I'm sure many of the viewers believe that as well. But it's one thing to practice what you preach, because you can say that, but then you spend 3 hours every single day obsessing over pop culture, other creators online, political questions, and women you hate. And it's like, that belief you have in principle is not how you're living your life. And if you're worried about, especially the Fuentes guys, you're worried about the Jewish element and all these kinds of things. Ultimately, you're worried about, you know, the fake Messiah and the Antichrist and stuff. It's like, the more attached you are to the creature, the more attached you are to the political scene, the more you attach like a messianic reality to America, right? Or any nation. Because the whole America First thing, especially attaching it to race in a lot of ways, it's not really reconcilable with Catholicism. It's the ironic part of it all is that that methodology or that political philosophy, in practice, it's not much different than the one that will bring about the Antichrist, because it's all about attaching sort of a specialness to a particular people. It's about attaching a specialness to a particular race of people over others, practically speaking, right? He will tell, I mean, he was just on Patrick Beck David's podcast talking about how like interracial marriage is against his values. And granted, there's nothing wrong with people wanting to stay within the clan, but the Catholic understanding of race has nothing to do with skin color. If you look at the way the authors in the more politically incorrect, meaning saner time, would talk about race, like German is different than French race. You know, English is different than Spanish race. But even then, the missionaries come to North America and like all of Mexico is a mix of European Catholics and natives.
And yeah, isn't Fuentes a mestizo because his name is Fuentes?
Yeah, I mean, he's like a quarter Mexican and then partly Italian or something. But the point is, it's like, so even this idea, like, you can't follow a guy who says he's Catholic and then says like interracial marriage is against his values. Cause like, that's not Catholic values. It's kind of racist and you've got to be careful with that. Like St. Paul's pretty clear. There's neither Jew nor Gentile or Greek, you know, meaning once we're incorporated into the body of Christ, those differences, while they're important for reasons of like cultural cohesion, I get that. But they really are secondary to baptism. And so you can't speak out of both sides of your mouth. That's a difficult thing. And the American system, and I know people are going to yell at me, you're the Canadian talking about America. America represents all sort of post-Christian liberal democracies. So, you know, take America as the archetype. It's liberalism. Like that system of like freedom of speech, freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, all these kinds of things. Obviously, it's good to defend your homeland. Not being patriotic is disordered. You should be patriotic no matter where you're from, because it's a good moral thing. But it's also not a Catholic governmental society. It's not, you know, American exceptionalism, so to speak, isn't reconcilable with Catholicism. And that's a huge part of the message. So I would just caution guys. I would say, I get it. I know he's based. I know he's the memes, the streams. He is funny. He is smart. He is articulate. He is courageous. Many, many virtues. But there's an element there which I think is just not worth it. And I would hope at the off chance he would ever even listen to this, rather than go on some war against these two nobodies on a Catholic podcast, I would hope that he could take it to heart, because I think if he could just clean some things up, he would actually be a really big force for good. I think he could express all the same political things without screaming F-bombs and derogatory statements. So that's kind of the last thing I'll say. Do you have anything to add before we move on?
Sure. I mean, I would just say, E. Michael Jones has responded to Nick Fuentes about his racialism, which seems to me to completely refute the entire program of some sort of racial theory about race and DNA and whatnot. And he made a comment in one of his podcasts, E. Michael Jones, he said, like, the writing books is how you really deal with topics, writing books. And he said, the opposite of this is scrolling. Scrolling is, by definition, zero critical thinking, zero depth, zero true analysis. And I think of the essence of the tools of manhood, becoming a man. Number one is walking with the wise, and you grow wise. So you have to be in contact with an older, wiser man, typically more than one, hopefully, who you have real flesh and blood contact with in real life, not just on the internet. And then you have the brotherhood in real life as well. And then you have, thirdly, you have the books, the wisdom contained in the books. And then you can get all this, but none of these things are listening to a podcast, or it's just because there's just, by definition, that medium cannot go deep enough to really apprehend the truth that you need as a man. And so this is what I would point to is what is necessary. So pointing towards those things, using a podcast, like we're trying to use a podcast to point people towards the depth. We can't even get the depth here. Like, this isn't just by necessity. We cannot get the depth here. So we're pointing y'all to where the depth is. And I mean, I don't take it from us. Just go to the wise. I mean, we're just young men too. We're just 37. But the only reason I can confidently do anything is because I'm bouncing my ideas off the older and wiser people in my life to make sure that I don't go off track.
Except I'm younger than you, Tim. You forgot that part.
So you're relying on me. I know. I'm older than what?
That's right. I'm relying on you. No, that's good. And I think that's a good way to segue. So, Groypers, we're not your enemy. We're just, we would like to see all of you in heaven, including Nick Fuentes. And so pray for us and we'll pray for you. Okay. Here's some questions, Tim. Here are three questions we have from our Terror of Demons chat. And Scott says, could you give us some tips on how to maintain consistency, especially for the interior life as a remedy for sloth? Maybe you have discussed this, he says, before, so forgive my ignorance if I forget. So we might have at some point, Tim. We've done like 100 of these things. But tips on how to maintain consistently, especially for the interior life as a remedy for sloth. I'll answer because this is actually something I'm dealing with right now, and then I'll let you go. So right now, people who watch my stuff know we're going through a little bit of a cross right now with our baby. Genetic disease, very sad. I'm not going to go into it too much. Well, these types of moments, you get really melancholic, you know, like the cross is heavy and it makes you tired. And my regimented prayer life that I'm used to as a Third Order member has been very inconsistent. Not because I'm having doubts or anything like that, but because life is just kind of crazy. Sleep is not good because things are happening. But the one thing that I never miss ever, 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 ever is the rosary. Like, I literally think I would stop breathing if I didn't pray the rosary once a day. And so that is something that has not stopped. And talking to priests about it and stuff, like, they were, you know, telling me, like, it's natural. It's normal in these times of great difficulty that things are just not going to look the same. So you sort of cling to what is constant and never let go of that. So although I would like things to get back to normal, it's just not going to happen for a while. It's not in the cards. The season of life is not letting it happen right now. Even finding time to do this podcast, like, it's difficult. But I don't miss that one essential. And so as long as you can maintain something where you're beholden to it, I think that goes a long way. What would you add to that?
Yeah, I really like how you put, if I don't do this, I won't be able to breathe. Because I feel like when I'm dealing with sloth, like can't wake up, I'm tired in the morning, something like that, it's always a battle of your mind. The devil is taking something you feel in your body, probably like you're tired or fatigued, or you're sad, you're dealing with grief, like stuff like that. And which makes your body tired. And then the devil puts something in your brain mm-hmm. and says, like, oh, you can't do that. Don't overtax yourself. You know, don't overdo it. Like, and he'll put little ideas in your brain. And those are the ideas where everything crumbles. And so looking at, like, I dealt with a lot of desolation for years after I took over 1 Peter 5. And a big part of it was
all those trads.
Yeah. So the battle of realizing that I had to up my prayer routine, my asceticism and whatnot, because I realized if I don't do this, I'm going to die. That this is the way I say it to myself. If I don't do this, I'll die spiritually, at least. I'll get depressed. I'll get really tired. I won't be able to work, all this stuff I've been dealing with over the years. And I was like, if I don't do this, I will die. Like this mindset, like this is more important than breathing. That's the mindset. If you have that mindset behind it, then you can commit to the one thing. And this is where my spiritual father years ago, who's now deceased, rest in peace, he mm-hmm. laid this out, this wisdom to me that's always been helpful to me, where you form a rule of life. you think about it in your brain, you think rationally, and also when you're in consolation. You're not in a desolation period because you can't make plans during desolation. You're in consolation, you're at a certain amount of peace. You look at your life and say, like, what could I actually practically do and fulfill the duties of my state in life? And then you commit to that and you do it for 2 weeks. And then you see, you test yourself. Can I really do this into, you know, every single day? Is it too much or too little? And once you figure out that sweet spot where you know you can actually do it, then you make a firm commitment. And then you can, and then that's where the devil's going to start to get you and try to lie to you after that, after you make that firm commitment. So that's what's always helped me for years, was that wisdom. So that's all I can say.
No, that's great. I think that's great. Stick to the fundamentals. There you go. And speaking of most important things in life, and I'll keep talking here while Tim goes off and parents does some child rearing. But I like to think about things in physical metaphors, athletic metaphors. As it stands, I had hopes and dreams of completing my first half marathon this October. That was what I was working towards, but that is not going to happen now because the curveballs of life have made it, you know, it's hard for me to leave the home at this point in time for an hour. Like, even in my own town, just being not here is difficult with everything going on. And so I had to just drop that. And I'm like, I'm not going to stop running. I'm running way less than I'd like. And I've gone back to the basement, you know, dumbbells and barbells and stuff, which is obviously great as well. And I'm just like, what can I do? I can't train for that half marathon right now. It's just not going to happen. But I can, for 20, 30, 40 minutes without leaving the house, get my heart rate up, lift some weights, and at least maintain a level of physical discipline and fitness that's going to get me through this difficult time. Because if I let go of my health, it's going to get worse. And like in the spiritual life, it's like, I can't do all the things that I usually do because of what's happening. So I can't let go of what I have to do in order to keep myself going. And this will play into our next question, Tim, because this next question is tips for having a thriving marriage in the midst of parenting many children under the age of 10, aka busy season of life. I'll start. I got 6 kids. Our 7th is on the way, the one who's sick. And my oldest is 9. And our first 4 came in like 3.5 years. And none of them are twins. I resonate with this question, my friend. And I will tell you this much. The season that you're in some ways, is going to last like 15 years. So you're going to have to get rid of even this idea of like seasons. It's not going to end anytime soon. It's not a season. It's like an epoch. And I'm not saying that to be negative. What I'm saying is, so don't think, oh, I'll temporarily switch things up. It's not temporary. In the grand scheme of things, it's not. Because if you got 5, 6, 7, 8 kids under the age of 10, I mean, you're going to be doing your last potty training when you're like in your mid to late 40s. Okay. Like, so just accept it, be happy about it. And then look at your life and be like, what are the things that I can cut out? What are the good things that I can keep? I had to stop playing rugby. Boo hoo, poor me. But I loved it. And that was really hard to stop. But it was 2 practices a week, game on Saturdays. I'm probably going to get injured once a year. It was like, I just can't keep doing that. I played until we had 3 or 4 kids and they were really little. I just stopped. I had to. So I'm like, but I know myself, if I don't get to play some sports, I'm going to be like a dog who hasn't been walked. I still, despite what Nick Fuentes says, my testosterone, I don't think it's gone down. I still love the odd fisticuffs. So my buddy's like, do you want to be the goalie for my pickup hockey team once a week for like 15, 18 weeks a year or whatever. I'm like, I can do that. It's after bedtime. It gets the demons out. It gets the competition side of me out. It doesn't affect my life. It's not what I'd like to do in the ideal sense. I wish I could still be pretending I was a professional athlete, but I'm not. So I can do that. It's some competition, it's some friendship, it's some camaraderie, it's some sport, it's all those things. Doesn't affect my life. Also, it's not a serious commitment. So if I have to miss something, it's not a big deal. So when you have a lot of kids like that for, and I know I'm talking about sports here, but I always bring it back to sports. That's a archetypal truth for everything. So having a thriving marriage, when you're having all these children in a young age that are young, you have to make sure you don't burn out, which means no matter if it's church stuff, social life stuff, athletic stuff, business stuff, you can't take on as much as you'd like. You just can't. And that's okay. So just accept that. And then instead of trying to add like more lemons, squeeze more juice out of the lemons you have. And and then as far as your wife is concerned, be very attentive. Be very attentive to how tired she is. Be very attentive to her emotions. No, we're not called to be like, you know, our wife's therapist in this like emotional sense. That's what her friends are for. But we are called to know what's going on with her so that we can be stable to help her stabilize when her female nature, which has many pros and cons, just like our male nature has many pros and cons, but we complement each other and we can be there for her when she needs that. And that's pretty much all I got for this stream of consciousness. Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to figure that out, honestly. So I'm no wise man when it comes to juggling all the kids and the marriage. I mean, I've just been trying to implement various wise sayings that I've gotten from the wise. I mean, I would go to the wise old married couple that's been married for 50 years and raised 13 kids, that sort of thing. And your parents, like, talk to them, get their take. There is one married couple that's influenced us a lot, and they've really just the importance of both of you having individual prayer time. And one of the man was telling me like the importance of the man providing for his wife's spiritual time so she can be alone with the Lord. So you're taking the kids and you're taking care of whatever so that she can have that time, the importance of that. I heard another, it was on Catholic Gentlemen podcast. They were talking again to an older couple and they were like, what's the secret of your marriage? And they said a weekly date night. They like have a date night every single week. Somehow they make that happen. And which sort of begs the question of like the support system you have, you know, the outside system with your own parents, her parents, cousins, whatever, uncles, etc., babysitters. How do you work that out? Somehow they made that work, and that was a key for them. So it's a difficult thing. It's its own cross, but it's a great deal of joy. That's all I got, though.
No, that's great. Yeah, and I should have said that as well, is find a couple that you can look up to. We've done that, various couples, and we've had a similar advice, the date night thing. Make one of the couples we know very holy. You know, they would make sure that at least every couple years, they both had an opportunity to go on like an Ignatian retreat. And they'd obviously pick up the slack at home, like, so the other one could go and things like that. It's going to look different for everything, but a big, just overarching piece of advice is both of you commit to cutting each other some slack, because it's tough. It's amazing, but it's tough. And God willing, you know, you'll be a saint in heaven one day, but you're not yet. Neither is she. So you have a lot of learning to do as you go. And go easy on each other, because if you're not united, then there's a problem. You know, there's a problem. And then also last thing I'll say is, while it is good to seek advice from couples, certainly do so, because the older and wiser ones will be humble. Do not compare yourself to the couples that are your age, who you think are doing a great job. They might be doing a great job, but they might be doing a terrible job that you don't know about. Or also, the circumstances are just different. The work commitments are different. The temperaments and personalities of the parents are different. How, you know, I gave a talk to women, actually, a woman's talk. Can you imagine me, a man, talking to women, Tim? It was so scandalous.
Oh, man.
And it was down in Texas at the Sanctus Ranch. And the one thing I said, and these women were bawling their eyes out, because I told them to stop watching all, or stop taking those like YouTube mom life people too seriously and trying to do everything they do. Because I'm like, you know, that's not real, right? Like, they have a staff, or they're Protestants, so they're like contracepting anyway, and they're planning their life and all that kind of, like, so there's just so much going on where, you know, I kept saying, you don't have to actually make everything of sourdough every single day in order to be like a true woman. Sourdough is great. I love it. My wife makes it often. It's wonderful. But it's like, put it away for this time, because, like, you know, that's not real. It's reality TV. And there's so many things when we compare ourselves to other couples where it's like, we're getting the reality TV version, not the real version. So whether it's questions like homeschooling or a school near you or whatever, make your own call on that and don't try to be like somebody else, because you don't really know what's going on. So
one quick thing I just thought of was something my spiritual father told me was, he said that the best way to love your children is to love your spouse.
Yeah.
And when you're loving your spouse, it actually helps the children immensely. And it makes sense, because they only exist because you loved each other. That's like the foundation of their being. This is why divorce is so harmful to children. So just loving your wife is a parenting, an act of parenting.
Yeah, that's good. All right, last question, Tim. We kind of addressed this in our last show, so I don't think we have to talk about it too much. Someone asks about security protocols at your local parish in light of recent and current events. So I'll jump in fast here. We do have security protocol at our parish. It's very simple. We have members of our Holy Name Society who are in a position to like not have to watch little kids during Mass. Either they don't have children or they're older and they can. And they just sort of make sure they're at certain parts of the church. So, you know, for example, we have two doors to get into the church. And when Mass begins and the priests process out the one door, so-and-so goes and locks those doors. No one has to go in or no one has to go out of them during Mass. And then that door is taken care of. And then he stands at the back where the other door is during Mass. And we do things like a head count, and we make sure, you know, so-and-so is always sitting up with his family in that pew, and so-and-so is always here. So it's kind of like, just keep an eye out on those exits or whatever. That's pretty much all we do as far as like security protocol. We don't have any imminent risks of danger, thankfully, where we live. It hasn't really happened around here. It could. But that's kind of what we do. I think that's, unless you've got some like former Delta Force guys in your parish or something like that, you're probably not going to get much more sophisticated than basically having guys at posts. And then in certain places you can be armed depending on the rules. So that's, I think that's the heart of it. What do you think?
Yeah, we have many cops or former cops in our parish. So they're carrying firearms, concealed carry in the state of Michigan. We also were informed about the state law. The state law of Michigan is that you cannot disturb any religious ritual whatsoever. That's a state offense. And so you can just take the guy out, call the cops, he'll come and get him.
Yeah.
So we Same have... Here. Our security team is run by an older, wiser gentleman. He's also like a kung fu master. Funny story, for our troops of St. George, I was doing a training for the boys on weightlifting. And as a demonstration, I actually took on this guy. So he's like 65, okay? I took him on in hand-to-hand combat, all right? Just as a to show the boys. And he just took me down. It was great. It was like Chuck Norris style stuff. But he's the leader of the security team. And we just have a few dozen guys, and he just spreads us out between the different masses. And we have trainings every quarter or so. And we just talk about, we do role plays where we have like somebody, you know, comes in and disturbs the mass, what do you do? Then you, we have to role play it. And so we're trained for that. I think if you just get a bunch of guys together who are fathers, there's an instinctual framework where we start to act as men. I don't think it requires too much training, just being aware of the laws of the land, what you can and cannot do. I think that there's a basic framework for that. I would just find the guys in your parish, get people who are experienced, if you can, cops, if you can, or whatever. If it's as simple as like you get the guys together, maybe you're all clueless, you could just call the police and say like, hey, we just want to defend our, like, what are the laws here? What, like, how does this work? Like, what can we do? You know, just finding out what's already there, because thankfully there are basically laws on the books, which are basically sanity for a lot of this stuff, which I think helps protect us, helps us do what we need to do. Those are my thoughts. I think that you can be very effective in that.
Yeah. And last thing I'll say before we sign off is just kind of like how if you're in chaos, you want to have one voice, because too many voices makes more chaos. Even if you're in a place where you can all carry, have something in place where, like, just think about yourself being in a crowded church. Like, I was down in St. Mary's, Kansas, right, at the Immaculata. They have security protocols, but Kansas is a constitutional carry state. Like, you could carry probably a bazooka down the road, because it's like, you can do whatever you want. Okay, fine, it's great. But I'm imagining like 2,000 people at mass, 75 to 100 guys carrying, and like hearing screaming, and all of a sudden it's like an old Western with all the guns going off in a saloon. Like, that's a risk. So, yikes. Like, have guys who it's their job, because you want to have like one gun, just like you want to have one voice, you know, maybe a couple guys who are, you know, like, you know, who are tasked with it. I get it. But actually, even if you have a place where you can carry, you still want to have protocols in place, because the last thing you want is chaos with more bullets flying. So, all right. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I got, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned for more of these. We're back to doing these. We're going to have to take a little break in a little bit as I deal with some stuff, personal life stuff. But we are committing to doing the Terror of Demons show pretty soon. It's going to be on Pelican. Pelican Plus. You can find the link for that in the description area. That's coming fast. Official launch date, October 7th. More information to come. And that's all I got for you. Tim, anything to add before we go?
That's it. PelicanPlus.com.
All right. Peace out, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.